everybody. This is Catfish on Ice, a brand new episode coming at you right now, a couple days before Thanksgiving. This is your host, Chad Minton. I got a very special guest co-host with me tonight. It is my good friend, Max Greenberg, who writes with me on Credlines.com. Really great guy, really great friend of the show, and I'm really excited to have him co-hosting with me tonight on episode 209 of Catfish on Ice. How you doing, Max?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be back on an episode. It's been a long time since I've been on one of these. I think it's been literally over a year, which is a long time for me.
Well, these episodes fly by, man. Like,
they do.
It's all a blur. Like, I literally have to double check every time I'm putting a new episode out to make sure I'm on the right number, because these episodes fly by. But wow, do we have a great episode in store for you tonight, because arguably, in recent memory at least, let's not have the recency bias going here, but probably one of the more exciting regular season wins in recent memory for the Nashville Predators as they come back, storm back in the last 60 seconds to take down the mighty Colorado Avalanche. My heart was beating so crazy. We're going to give our initial takeaways to open up episode 209 about that game, as the Predators now have back-to-back wins over division opponents. So if there's one way to neutralize that nasty losing streak and that really bad road trip, it's to beat division opponents. Absolutely. We've got two of them now, Max.
No, especially when a team like the team is one of the best in the league and just won the Cup not even 2 years ago. That's a huge win and huge for team confidence and morale for a team that's so young like the Predators are.
Definitely, man. And, you know, watching that game, I don't think the Avalanche necessarily played that bad of a game. I just think that, for one, the Predators played an extremely disciplined game, especially on the defensive end of the game. They did not give the Avalanche a lot of really good high-danger chances on Saros, which is so incredibly important right now while Saros tries to break out of his rut. So that's the first thing I saw. They held the Avalanche to under 3 goals expected, according to Money Puck, which is just – that is not an easy accomplishment. Let me just put that into perspective. You keep a team with Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, Cale Makar, among all the other great role players that they have on that team. You keep that team to under 3 expected goals. That right there deserves a lot of credit to the Predators, and also, as bad as the penalty kill has been, they came up big on penalty kills in that game. So those are the two biggest difference makers for me in that game, other than the obvious of scoring the two goals in 16 seconds apart.
No, I mean, you know, well, your point about the discipline, you know, I think the only thing I can say is, you know, they took a lot of penalties, and I think so did the Avalanche in that game. They were in the penalty box a lot, but, they killed them off all except for that one. Biggest thing I saw is they just battled. They battled the whole time, and you could just see it the whole game in the third period. There was just no quit whatsoever. And then, you know, I don't think anyone expected the game to end like it did there, but they got rewarded for their efforts, and that was huge to see.
Definitely, for sure. We got some friends coming in. Mike Twitter says, yo, yo, Chad and Max, what a great win to follow up with the show. Definitely. Wish we could have gone live last night. That would have been really amazing. Our friend Nikki jumps on and says, nice to see Max on. So, yes, Max Greenberg is coming on as a guest co-host tonight because this is a really hectic week. I literally just left my night job to come here and record this podcast, and Max was so kind enough on very short notice to fill in as guest co-host on this Thanksgiving week.
I love these podcasts.
Yes, Rich Howe will be back as a co-host next week when we can get more into our normal schedules. But very happy to have Max jumping on here. He's got a ton of knowledge. Also has a ton of Titans knowledge. I really want to pick his brain on what is going on with the two-tone blue. But we will pick that for another time because we are a Predators podcast, even though a lot of our listeners are definitely Titans fans as well. But I don't even want to dig into that right now, man. Let's focus on the positive here, and that's the Predators have won two games in a row.
Oh, yeah. Let's not talk about the Titans right now. It's bad.
As we roll through this episode, we got some underlying topics to cover here. The game within the game, if you will. So, of course, the big one going into the game was, I actually think Predators fans held it together pretty well with their emotions, all things considered, because we know how this fan base reacts when certain players are benched, especially when it comes to the youth. Fans don't like it when you mess with the youth, and out of nowhere, Luke Evangelista was benched as a healthy scratch. I thought Andrew Burnett gave a very honest and candid answer. Why? And I think as long as everyone understands that he knows what he's doing, or at least we have to trust that he knows what he's doing right now. And he basically said, look, Evangelista's not playing up to his high potential. And sometimes these young players need to have a reset, and you don't want that player's confidence to slide more and more, especially this early in the season. And then before you know it, they're buried and they never get back that confidence. So I thought it was a great answer from the head coach. We're going to unpack a little bit more, but just initial thoughts real quick on Evangelista being benched for this game.
First of all, I want to comment that you're right. That the fan base, at least on Twitter, relatively speaking, did hold it together. I was expecting like a massive outcry. I literally tweeted saying, oh boy, Fred Switter is going to take this well. But surprisingly, you know, most of the people on Twitter were, and well, I don't know about Facebook. I'm not even on Facebook.
Yeah, I was about to ask you, Max. Did you check on Fred's Facebook?
I don't go on Facebook. I'm not a Facebook user at all. I don't check Facebook for any of those stuff. I just hear how bad it is. I don't ever go on the Facebook.
I mean, it might still be on fire as we speak right now on Fred's Facebook. I don't know if they ever doused the flames from last year, to be quite honest. But yeah, we didn't check Facebook. But we are streaming live on Facebook as well right now. So we still love you for all of our Facebook viewers as well. Don't get us wrong. We love you.
Yeah, but, you know, in all seriousness regarding the whole Evangelista thing, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, context matters. And it's been proven repeatedly that Andrew Brunette is really, you know, taking this trial and error thing to heart. And he's, you know, he's scratched other players. He scratched Tomasino a bunch of games. I'm sure we'll talk about that. He scratched Liam Foudy a game. He scratched Yusuf Parson in a game. You know, he's still in the stage where he's really still trying to figure out his team, man, you know. And this is not like John Hines last year where he was scratching dude after dude after every game where it felt like almost where he was replacing them with these super physical bruising guys who really didn't seem like they had a ton of skill. And that it just got redundant with his, you know, dumping physical style. And, you know, and you can just see how different it is under Brunette. And, you know, as far as, you know, long-term implications, I really wouldn't worry about it. I do expect Evangelista to be back in the lineup tomorrow night. You know, I guess we don't know that for sure, but, you know, I do think he'll get back in there soon enough. You know, it didn't, you know, at least from Brunette, what he said, and Chad said, it was a very, you know, honest answer about what he basically saying. You know, he's not living up to his expectation right now, just take a night off. And, you know, I think he'll be back in there, but, you know, and let me just say another thing right now. It is not like Brunette does not have to make some tough decisions with the lineup, because there are so many guys on this team who you would justify putting in this lineup, but there are just not enough spots, especially at the forward position. So he's going to have to make some decisions from game to game that, you know, the fans are not necessarily going to like, but, you know, this is the time to do it because he still has a team. He's figuring out, you know, it's very, everyone knows at this point with the Preds, they're, like I said, they're literally in a figure things out trial and error phase. Yep. And, you know, but, and he already has to make some tough decisions as it is. Yep. And we saw with how they've waived Samuel Fagimo a few weeks ago. I think, you know, that was one of those things where I think, you know, definitely having to narrow down the lineup choices was a factor in that. And, but yeah, no, I don't think Evangelista is going to be out long-term or anything like that. I just think it's one of those things where Brunette's just trying to figure out what works. And, but, you know,
he's also holding these young kids accountable, and you have to do that. I'll call it tough love. Maybe we can call it tough love here. You don't want to coddle these young players either. You definitely don't want to coddle a player as talented as Luke Evangelista. No. If anything, I think this is a badge of honor for Luke Evangelista, because I think Andrew Brunette realizes how special of a talent Luke Evangelista is. And he is literally he's still technically a rookie right now. So you don't want to – it's a long grind. It's a long season. And, I mean – and Tomasino fits into this same equation, even though he's been in it a lot longer, but still, he's still a young player as well. You're going up constantly against great superstars night in and night out. Unless there's very few teams you're going to play in this league where they don't have at least one superstar, if not multiple, that you're going to have to go up against. And that can grind you out. And so I actually think this is a great thing. We'll unpack it a little bit more, because I want to actually – discuss more about the lineup as a whole, not just Evangelista, but also Tomasino, Liam Foudy, all of these things, because like you just touched on there, Max, Andrew Burnett's got a lot to sort out, yes, and it's not easy. It's not easy at all. So we'll talk about it more.
Another thing I wanted to mention about Evangelista, and then we'll move on to the lineup stuff, is, you know, he started out well last year. He came in, he outperformed expectations, but people got to realize that, you know, that's not how it's going to be at the very beginning constantly, because the dude is, I believe, 21 years old. He's very young, like you said, Chad. He's still technically a rookie. There are going to be bumps along the road. It's not like just because he started out pretty well last year that it's just going to be perfect the whole rest of the way through. Like, he's going to have his struggles as a young player that he is. He's not even played a full – if you really count him, I don't even think he's played 6 months in the NHL.
Yeah. We'll talk about it more here. We also are going to have to discuss another injury blow for the Predators. Lord. Unfortunately, Cody Glass back on IR after he just got back a few games
ago. And you knew when you saw me yesterday something was wrong, the way he was grabbing at that shoulder.
And he just notched his first point of the season. So this is something that no one would have had on their Preds bingo card going into the season. But Cody Glass was actually the last regular forward in this lineup to register a point.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, he's hardly played. I mean,
he was like, I think he was 8 or 9 games in before he finally got that first point. All I'm saying is I'm not trying to bash the guy, but he was finally starting to look really good last night against Colorado. I thought he played well. He was engaged. I liked how he I can't remember the player he was kind of getting a little – I thought he was going to drop the gloves with this Avs player. Who was that? Was it Johnson?
I don't remember, honestly.
It might have been John. It was, but you remember what I'm talking about. I don't know if that's where he.
I honestly don't. I must admit.
Sustain the energy, but you know the sequence I'm talking about, right?
I actually don't remember the sequence.
I thought he was going to drop the gloves with this. Maybe someone can jump in the comments and remind me. But he was getting feisty out there. He was, and he's not a fighter.
No, not at all.
I don't know if that's where he sustained the injury or when it happened, but I'm just
Think it was there. Like, it was in the
it was
third
a very
period. He went right back to the bench, like clutching his shoulder, and just went right back to the locker room. Like, you just had a terrible feeling right then and there that something was wrong. And sure enough,
it was a very, very physical game. You know that's going to happen when you play the Avalanche. Yep. The Avalanche do not take they take no prisoners. They just go at you. They come at you hard. They're always on top of you. And I don't think the Avalanche necessarily played a bad game. I just think the Predators played at the top of their potential.
And that's it's one of those things where, you know, this is always kind of a weird thing to say because it's like, you know, both teams wanted, but it seemed like one of those games where maybe the Preds just wanted it a little more.
It's possible. I mean, there are times when teams like the Avalanche can maybe overlook their opponent. I do think the Avalanche had an awful third period. I will say that.
Not, yeah, they the didn't entire do much third, of anything.
They definitely put it in cruise control in that last 5 minutes or so of the third period, whereas the Predators came out as a desperate team, as they should be.
Yep.
And, you know, you see that final 60 seconds and how that last goal is scored to actually get the win. You saw Cale Makar have an uncharacteristic giveaway in his own zone, blew a tire, completely fell out. And, you know, that was just that relentless forecheck and that desperation that the Predators were playing with. And Yakov Trenin gets that goal. And we know Yakov Trenin does that.
Yep.
That's how Yakov Trenin is. He is the type of player that's just constantly in your grill. He's just always on top of you. He's like just that annoying pest that you can't swat away. And that's just how the Predators went out and won this game, is they were the desperate team. They were playing like their season was on the line. That early in the season, they were playing like their season was going to be over if they lost that
absolutely.
Game.
Yeah, they absolutely did. And speaking of that final goal, I'm kind of going a little off topic here, but not really. Did you see the Avalanche play-by-play announcer today talking about that? Like, did you know what I'm talking about?
I went back. I did go back and listen to the – I always love listening to this. I love listening to the other team call a sequence like that, because it's just always interesting to me how they see it compared to the home broadcast. And, I mean, yeah, he was – What are you referencing though? Because all I got from it was that he was just extremely frustrated. And he was just,
I mean, it was just bitter. He literally blamed the loss on, like, he said Nashville deserved the tie, but on that goal, he blamed the glass in the building for the loss, which, yeah, it took a weird bounce, but that happens all the time with the puck on the glass. That's just how it's built. And I literally remember a few years ago, it was whatever. I'm sure all Preds fans remember this. It was the 2017 playoff and the first one against the Blackhawks. That game three, the Preds were on the power play. Blackhawks take a clear to kill time on the penalty kill. And that puck literally took the craziest bounce off the glass. Nearly, if Pekka Rinne didn't get, if he missed an inch on that puck, that would have gone dead center. And that literally would have broke his shutout streak in the playoffs. Because
I do remember that.
The first two games.
Memory like lane.
That, the point is, that happens all the time in hockey. And the way that announcer was talking, is just, he literally sounded like a petulant child. And it's to the point where, like, you literally couldn't believe this guy was an actual TV announcer. Like, this is how you're going to represent yourself? It was literally as, like, I'm, of course, every, you know, home, regional, network, whatever, is going to be fairly biased towards their team. And, you know, you and I are definitely guilty of being biased towards our teams, but, like, that was just another level of, like, wow. Yeah. Like, how does, like, you would watch that and think, like, wow, how does this guy have a job announcing on television when he can be that just unreasonably bitter?
Yeah, I mean, it happens. You hear it from a lot of the broadcasts. When you listen to the other side, it can be that way, especially there's certain broadcasts that are definitely really hard to listen to.
But it made Jack Edwards look reasonable.
Yeah, just looking at the overall stats here, some of the analytics, Money Puck rated this as a 50-50 toss-up in the deserve to win o-meter, which basically they do over 1,000 simulations. 50-50 toss-up is how they rated this game. The Predators actually, this would have been another really tough loss for the Predators to take in a game where they felt like they did everything right. And that's what it seemed like heading into the final 60 seconds.
Yeah.
It really felt like the Predators were going to take another one of those losses where all you're going to hear in the press conference is, we did a lot of good things, but we just didn't get the result we wanted. And, like, we're so sick of hearing that. But right. That's literally what we were heading towards. And you look at the expected goals in all situations, the Predators 3.76, the Avalanche were 2.24. So, I mean, analytically speaking, the Predators really deserve to win this game in that regard. Going back to Saros, we talked about in episode 208 how worried I am about how he's been playing recently and how he's not seeing the puck well. He doesn't look like his normal self. And they did finally turn to Lankanen. And Lankanen turned in a really great performance against the Blackhawks to get the losing streak over with. I was not against starting Lankanen again. I know I'm crazy, but I was not against starting him two in a row. I really wasn't. But they went back to Saros. Totally understandable. He's the franchise goalie. I get it. And I might be a little bit in the minority here, but I don't think it was particularly a strong game for Saros. Yes, he made some good saves. He especially in the beginning of the game, I thought he made some good saves and fought some pucks off. But he still finished in the negative in expected goals or saves above expected. He finished below in the negative again. So he let by at least one goal he definitely should have had. So I don't think this is – yeah, it's great that he got the win. He ended his five-game losing streak, which he had never suffered in his career. So that's great. I'm not trying to be negative here. But I'm still – my concerns about how Saros is seeing the buck right now remains true right now. I don't think it was particularly – that strong of a game for him.
And I also don't think it was a terrible game for him by any means either. I don't think he let in any goals that were like, like unbelievable how you missed that. But, you know, he still gave up three goals. And let me also, you know, say I'm, at least for now, I'm really not that worried about Saros, because him starting off the year slow is nothing new. He always does this. But at the same time, you can look at him and be like, is he ever going to be like the best of the best if he can't be consistent? Like, of course, it's hard to be consistent across an 82 game schedule. But when you're seeing this trend play out year after year after year, you have to ask yourself, is there some, I mean, it's obviously you rather start, you know, bad than finish bad. It's not about how you start, it's about how you finish. But it's a little bit of a worrisome trend. Although I will say, you know, as far as later in the year, I definitely expect Saros to, you know, get it back together.
For sure. I mean, look, I think Saros is going to have to figure out how to be a more consistent player, just like you said, if he's ever going to be considered that top-tier goalie that many people think he is. I mean, he got plenty of predictions around all the NHL experts around the league of winning his first Vezina Trophy this year.
Yep.
Could he still rally and do that? Yes, but he's got a lot of ground to make up because his analytics are in the tank right now, and he is actually not the catalyst for why the Predators are winning lately. No. It's just a fact.
No, it's not at all.
And if he can become the catalyst, find the Predators winning again, to go along with an offense that's evolving and getting better and better, a power play that's getting better and better, then watch out. Suddenly the Predators can actually become a playoff quality team if they can get both of those things clicking at the same time. Because for all these years, even going back to Pecorine, this team would just rely night in and night out on getting bailed out by a gem of a game from their goalie. They're not getting that this year. And if that can return to this team, if Saros can return to that form and have those nights along with an offense that can produce goals and score two goals in 16 seconds like they did last night, this is going to be a really tough team to beat, and they're going to actually reach their full potential, maybe even a lot faster than we thought. But Saros has got to become more consistent. He hasn't been there.
Yeah, he absolutely has to be in. But again, I say this conversation is nothing new. So I personally will reserve full judgment till about December or January.
Fair enough. Other things about this game that really stood out to me. Yes, the Preds power play goes 0-for-4. I thought that they had a lot of good zone time. They just couldn't find a way, and they were going up against one of the best penalty kills in the league. I mean, watching the Avalanche on the penalty kill is literally like a well-oiled, fine-tuned machine.
All over the place.
I mean, in a world of AI, all you hear now is AI is going to take over. AI is going to be the new norm. The penalty kill for the Avalanche looks like a bunch of AI robots out there, dude. I mean, all I had to do was tip my cap. I mean, I'm watching the Predators. I'm watching them try to get set up on their power play. I'm watching them do their slingshot thing they like to do, where they like to do the drop pass and zoom into the zone and get set up. And they're doing all these things, and it felt like the Avalanche were 6-on-5 on a penalty kill. They were down a man, and it seemed like they had the extra player on the ice killing a penalty. I mean, I just got to credit the Avs. That's what championship teams do. So I'm not going to worry too much about the Predators not telling a power play goal. I just thought, look, the Avalanche have a world-class penalty kill. What can he do?
And I'm sure there's still going to be inconsistency with the power play because, again, this is such a new team. And Andrew Brunette is, like I say, I emphasize, going through that trial and error phase with this team. So there are going to be nights where the power play, I mean, as with every team, but especially a team like the Preds. But to your point, Chad, yeah, the Avalanche are absolutely swarming out there on the penalty kill. The Preds could do nothing last night.
Yeah.
For the man advantage.
What did you think about the depth of the team last night? So since Evangelista wasn't in there, we know Philip Forsberg. Well, let's talk about Forsberg first. How can we go any further
without
talking about Forsberg? All right, so Philip Forsberg is literally – he's playing in elite company right now. I posted on X today that Philip Forsberg is top five. He's fourth in the league right now. And shots on goal per 60 minutes. And he is with some elite company. He's with David Pastrnak. He's up there with Brady Tkachuk's up there. He's William Nylander is in there. So he is among the best skaters in the league, some of the best forwards in the league in terms of producing offense. Over 13 shots on goal per 60 minutes is where Forsberg is at right now. The dude is on a mission. We talked about it when he opened up the first few games and he wasn't scoring goals and he was putting up all those shots on goal, but he wasn't scoring the actual goals. And I kept saying, let's be patient. It's going to happen. It's going to come. He's doing the right things. He's going to get rewarded. And that's a microcosm of this entire team. But it's led by Forsberg. And the dude is literally – you're expecting him to score one or two goals every night right now. That's how locked in he is.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I was literally going to bring up, you know, everyone was talking about, you know, just give him time. These goals are going to come. And now they absolutely are. I don't remember his exact stats per game, but, you know, he's the underlying stats show he's one of the biggest offensive threats in the league right now. And, you know, just it's also really good to see after last year he had to bow out early in the season due to concussion. People were kind of wondering, is that going to affect him? I believe that was at least his second concussion in his career. But it doesn't look like it's bothering him at all right now. He's been full systems go, and he still has the great shot he has, and he's just the overall, but also his overall playmaking ability. He, like I say, he's a true threat out there right now, and up there with some of the best in the league.
For sure. Forsberg puts up another 6 shots on goal in this game. Let's see. Cody Glass had 5 shots on goal. That goes back to what I was saying earlier. It's really a shame that he takes another injury. He's back on IR because I thought it was his best game of the year for sure. Cody Glass, his own personal best game of the year. I really felt like he was engaged and he was getting back into the swing of things. So 5 shots on goal from Cody Glass. He won a few faceoffs as well. Roman Josi had 4 shots on goal. Colton Sissons even got in on the shots on goal. Overall, a really good night for that. Even you didn't even have to really rely on Ryan O'Reilly. He had an assist, but you know, O'Reilly was largely out of the picture in terms of shooting the puck. He did have a really, really, I don't even know if he, I think he got credit for an assist on this goal, but the goal from Jeremy Lauzon, where did you see that? So remember the goal from Jeremy Lauzon way outside yep. near the red line. And Ryan O'Reilly literally boxed out and built a wall, a shield over.
Yeah, he was screening. Like Georgiev didn't see it at all. Screened.
That was a crafty veteran move. That's why you love having a guy like Ryan O'Reilly on your team. And I mean, those are things that you don't see in the box score. But, I mean, what can he do if you're Georgiev or any goalie in that situation when you got a guy like that just completely blocking you? That's a team goal right there.
Absolutely. And one other player I want to talk about, and he didn't get an assist on this, I believe, but he really should on the first goal. The back check of Juuso Parsonen to set up that first goal. And the dude this year has been doing a lot of things so far that don't really show up in the stat sheet. But he has been a horse so far, working all over the ice for the Preds. He's got to be the league leader in drawing penalties. I feel like I send a tweet every game saying Juuso Parsonen just drew a penalty. The hard work he does every game, and again, a lot of it's not going to show up on the stat sheet, but he's been lights out from the eye test. And honestly, it's going to be hard now with Cody Glass and Tommy Novak being out, because takes a big hit on the center depth. But I really want to see Parsonen go back on that top line play with Forsberg and O'Reilly, because I was going to talk about this too. I'm going to look up on my phone. If you go back to Money Puck and you're looking at the lines in the league, if you look at expected goals percentage, and again the sample size is small, they are number that line so far right now. The last time they played together was 4 weeks. They are number 12 in expected goals percentage, and in terms and expected goals four per 60 minutes, they rank number 6. I that's a line I want to see. And Yusuf Nyquist has been playing pretty decently. He's come on lately, but
yeah,
that line is not doing what the Forsberg, O'Reilly, Parsonen line was doing. I want to see that group get another chance, because they weren't necessarily getting the goals to show, but a lot of that too was because the puck wasn't going in for Forsberg. I think if you give that line another chance, they're going to play lights out. But Parsonen's a player so far this year I cannot say enough about.
Well, I mean, look, with you just mentioned the center depth. Well, it definitely has taken a hit now with Glass back out and you're out Tommy Novak. So what are we thinking here? I guess we're thinking Parsonen at center now, right?
Probably second line. O'Reilly obviously up top. Parsonen probably at center.
You got Sissons at center. And then you got McCarron.
And then McCarron.
Yeah. Which, I mean, McCarron's been doing just fine.
Or here's an idea. O'Reilly, top center, obviously. Colton Sissons, number 2 center. With the way he's been playing this year, I think he can definitely handle that. And then you get McCarron again. And then also, maybe try Liam Foudy at center. That's his natural position. Yeah. Why not try that? Try put Parsonen in back on the wing. See how it goes.
We could try that. And that goes right back to what you said when we opened the episode about, Andrew Burnett is up against it right now, trying to figure out and losing Novak and Glass, that really throws a monkey wrench into everything.
Absolutely.
I mean, no injury is easy to deal with, but literally your two key players, young core players at the center position, very important players, are out for the foreseeable future.
Next month, I'm sure.
It's tough. Yeah, it's going to be really hard for the Predators to overcome this. You're going to need Forsberg to stay on his hot streak, and you're really going to need to get the scoring from the depth here, and that's going to be tough to do. But
it's starting to look like the end of last year where all the injuries just were piling up, because you still got Ryan McDonagh out, and you still got Luke Shen, although it looks like the return, those guys, it looks like they're closer to return.
They're getting closer. They are getting closer. That's going to be huge as well to get those back for the defense, especially for the penalty kill. I've been saying for a few weeks now, without Ryan McDonagh, it suffers. Yeah.
Yeah, we need Ryan McDonagh back pretty bad. I guess maybe we're going off on a tangent here, but I honestly kind of forgot Luke Shen was on this team. Like, what do you do now?
He only played one game, so.
He didn't play very well in it either.
Well, I think when he's
ready, it was only one game, of course.
When he's healthy and he's ready to return, you definitely have to get him back in the lineup. I mean, you're paying him whatever you're paying him right now, and he is going to be a big time deal for your penalty kill. That's the biggest thing you need Luke Shen for right now, is goalie protection and penalty kill. So I'll take him back in a heartbeat. I know, but you're right. I think down the road when that happens,
within the next week.
I don't know if Luke Shen's that close.
Maybe not. It seemed like he's back on the ice, though, so it must be fairly soon.
I could see in the next 2 weeks for sure, and you're right. So down the road's not very far down the road, actually. I mean, does Jeremy Lauzon come out at that point? I mean, because he's playing pretty well.
Does Alexander Kariya come out? I mean, he's not playing bad.
I don't know. It's tough. See, there you go right there. We are going on tangents here, folks, but it's okay. We'll just call it the tangent episode. Tangents are fun. Before we do that, want to tell you about DraftKings and our current offer. We are brought to you by DraftKings with our promo code THPN. Bet the action on the ice with DraftKings Sportsbook. All right, so there were no games tonight to react to, but there are a whole slate of games tomorrow on a Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving. There's already some really good lines out there. Let's look at some of these matchups we got for tomorrow that really interest me. You got the Bruins at the Panthers. That figures to be really close game, and DraftKings has it as at a virtual toss-up. Big
playoff rematch.
I got that game circled for sure. Going down the list with some interesting matchups here, you got Central Division action going on here with the Blues against the Coyotes. I think the Coyotes and the Blues have both played way better than maybe people thought they were going to play. I think,
especially the Coyotes.
That's another game that DraftKings has as a close toss-up, but they do have the Coyotes as a favorite. Of course, we got the Flames and the Predators tomorrow night at home for the Predators. And right now, that is another virtual toss-up according to DraftKings. But on the spread, they do have the Predators as the ever-so-slightest favorites. And the game of the night, the game that's going to be must-watch if you are a hockey fan, Vegas Golden Knights at the Dallas Stars, a potential Western Conference final preview.
Heavyweight battle
for sure. They've got the DraftKings has the Dallas Stars as the favorite.
Between two teams now. I strongly dislike, but they're very good teams.
Very good teams. Avs play the Canucks. Another good matchup. Western Conference.
Yeah, sneaky good matchup. Canucks have been a pretty good team this year.
So a lot of good matchups to use our promo code on for the first time tomorrow night, Wednesday night, if you will. So download the app now and use code THPN. New customers can get $150 instantly in bonus bets for betting just $5 on hockey. That's code THPN only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. The crown is yours. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-78-HOPENY or text HOPENY. That's 467-369 in Connecticut. Help is available. For problem gambling, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2023, all rights reserved. All right, that's our DraftKings offer. Plenty to get into. Have a little fun before Thanksgiving and throw down with our promo code and get some free bonus bets on those amazing matchups the day before Thanksgiving. So I'm sure a lot of people are off work tomorrow. I'm sure a lot of people are going to be hanging out with the family, hanging out at the house, doing some Thanksgiving prep work maybe. Throw on one of those great hockey games, including the Preds game tomorrow night. Make yourself a hockey night. There you go. All right, let's preview. I didn't think about this. We can preview that Flames game. That's a rematch for the Predators, and that was another one of those games not too long ago. We came out of that game thinking Predators should have won that game, but they didn't. The Predators, I don't have to say this for them to think this, but they need to be playing with the chip on their shoulder right now, and I think they are. Jeremy Lazan had a really good quote saying that they want to get back to being the team that's just a pain in the you-know-what to play against.
He literally said, I want to play like a prick.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that's some very interesting terminology. But, yeah, I mean, exactly. So this feels – I hate to be way too optimistic right now, but I kind of feel like the Predators are going to really take it to the Flames tomorrow night. I hope I'm not jinxing this team. But I really feel like they're going to take it to the Flames.
I don't know about taking them as far as the scoreboard goes, but I definitely think the Preds are going to come out pretty angry because, you know, they were up for a while in that game in Calgary. But at least from, you know, the way I watched the game, it didn't feel like they played that well all the rest of that whole night. And in that third period in that game, it kind of all unraveled. So I definitely think they're going to remember that, you know, as part of their – that was part of their – big, you know, losing streak on the road trip that they had. So, you know, I'm sure, you know, that's obviously fresh in their minds. So, you know, I definitely think you're going to see if nothing else, a very motivated Preds team coming out tomorrow night to try and, you know, make things really tough for the Flames. So I don't know how much, you know, how much we're going to win if we do, but I do think I would predict the Preds to win the game tomorrow night. I think they're starting to find a little more, you know, especially after a game like Monday night, that certainly builds a lot of confidence going forward if you can beat a team like the Avalanche. And just it may also build that confidence when, you know, over the course of the game, you know, they look like they were going to lose. But then when you get rewarded like that, that can kind of, you know,
springboard
build that confidence saying, yeah, we got rewarded for what we did. We have more confidence to build in it now. So I don't know if it'll be a blowout. I'm going to say the Preds win tomorrow night 4-2.
I would love that. That I'll take that. So if we go back, that first game with the Flames is a little over 2 weeks ago, and the Predators were up 2-0 in this game. Two first period goals in that game. Michael McCarron scored. Kiefer Sherwood scored. So that's one of the rare games where Philip Forsberg or Ryan O'Reilly did not find the score sheet.
And not only that, but two of the players you least expect to score. Maybe not Sherwood. Sherwood's been playing long the second line.
Sherwood's graduated to the next level where when he scores, it's not that big of a shot.
Not that. McCarron definitely is not expected, though.
But, yeah, so looking at that game there, they got very lackadaisical. They got let me go back and look at that. If I remember correctly – that was the game where the Predators just couldn't get a lot of shots on goal. Yeah, 18 shots on goal.
Couldn't do much of anything the whole night.
0-for-2 on the power play, only 18 shots.
Your word lackadaisical was the right way to describe how they played that night. They were not sharp at all.
They surrendered 39 shots on goal, which is a complete far cry from what they just managed to accomplish against a much better Avalanche team last night. So it just goes to show you, you never know what's going to happen game in and game out. And so you would like to think that the Predators are really starting to figure things out right now, because they just go up against the Avalanche last night and have a very good, strong defensive game. Maybe one of their best team defensive games they've had all year. I mean,
absolutely.
I really feel that way.
Especially 5-on-5. They only give up only one. The first goal they gave up was a shorthanded goal. Then the third goal was a power play. They gave up one goal at 5-on-5. And it was really only one. And that was, like, I think the only true onslaught the Avs had that whole game. And yeah, the Preds were really sharp 5-on-5. And they've really been sharp all year playing 5-on-5 defense, if we're being honest.
Yeah. So you go back and look at that Flames game. You're not going to beat a whole lot. You're not going to beat almost anybody. Even the, I know it's low hanging fruit, but you're not going to even beat the San Jose Sharks if you get outshot 39-18.
No,
it's not going to happen. That was actually one of those games where Saros should have gotten the win. He got robbed of a win. He played very, very well that game.
Yep.
So let's put it all together here. Let's get some revenge. Let's, you know what you did wrong in that game. You've got some game tape to go off of. I'm sure Brunette's all on top of that game film and what went on in that game. What did them wrong? Let's correct those mistakes. Let's really right the wrongs that we had in that game. And I strongly, and I just feel this way, I strongly feel like the Predators are a much better team than the Flames are. And if they even play 75% of the way they played, obviously I didn't even play 100%, but even if they play 75% of what they played last night against the Avs, they should be able to beat a team like the Flames.
Yeah. At least at this point in the year, I don't know if I would say they're much better. I will say I do believe they have a lot more potential to go than a team like the Flames, because the Flames are a team that seems like they're unraveling with how all their players have wanted out. Jonathan Huberdeau contract has not worked out for them at all. And I believe it was in that game against the Preds where Huberdeau was literally benched for that entire third period. Yeah, $10 million a year sitting on the bench.
Yeah. Flames are sitting at 7-8-3 on the season with 17 points. Of course, the Predators are at 7-10-0 with 14 points. So, I mean, here's another crazy thing. The Predators are not even getting – in some of these games where we feel like they did play well enough to win – they're not even getting into overtime and at least getting salvaging a point. That's really hurting them as well. Yeah. If you just think about it, if they could get – if two or three of these games they lost, they could have at least got it to overtime. They would be – if you look at where they're at, the standings right now in the Central, if they could just – if they could have managed a couple more overtime points, they'd be like right there, right in the middle of the division with Arizona, St. Louis, and Winnipeg. So it's really hurting them that they're losing these games that they're losing in regulation.
And that's where you're seeing, you know, Saros not being at his best is really hurting the team, as well as the penalty kill not being well. And that, again, both of those things are, you know, masking the fact that the Preds overall this year at 5-on-5 defense have been playing pretty well. But those two things are hurting them. And again, Saros not being on top of his game is a reason why the Preds aren't getting any of these games into overtime.
For sure. Definitely. All right. So let's get to we've done this in the past, Max, and we're going to do it again here. This is a fun segment here. It's called True or False, all right?
All right.
So let me start with one on Philip Forsberg. True or false, Philip Forsberg will surpass his 84-point season of 21-22. He'll beat it this year. He'll best it. He's going to get more than 84.
I'm going to say true. I'm going to say I'm provided, and this is, I guess this might be a little bit of a tall order.
Let's put an asterisk on it. If he gets injured,
yeah, that's what I was going to say. But honestly, with the way, because like I expect a team like the Preds, you know, as soon as they find more footing experience, especially with the young guys, I very much look at the Preds as a team that's only get better as the year goes on, and as they get better, a guy like Forsberg is only going to get better. So I'm going to say true. I do think he will surpass that.
All right, let me give you my answer first. Mike Twitter's chiming in from YouTube here. He says the last Flame games was a watch-along episode. Yep, I remember now. I tried to erase that from my memories. I was so sad. That was the game where that was a late start, late puck drop, and we're on the East Coast here. So, I mean, we were pushing midnight. And me and Rich were like, all right, you know what? We're signing off. We're gonna predict that the Predators win this in overtime. That was me and Rich's.
Man.
We ended up being dead wrong.
Luckily, I have a little bit easier over here. I'm in Nashville Central Time, so that was over around like 10:30 my time, which is a lot easier. Hour.
All right, Mike Twitter says false on he doesn't think Forsberg. So if Forsberg misses a handful of games, like maintenance games, I think that still counts. But let's say Forsberg stays healthy. I think that it's going to be really close. I mean,
I expect most people to say false for that, honestly.
Yes, I really admire your courage to go with that. Yeah. I love it. And the way he's playing right now, he could definitely do it. I'm going to say false, but he's going to come up just short.
All right. That's probably the take most people are going to go with, honestly.
I think he's going to come up just short. I could see him definitely finishing 80-plus, maybe even around 80 points. I do think he's going to probably have some maintenance days where he misses a few games here and there. Hopefully nothing long-term, but maybe a day-to-day situation might happen at some point for Forsberg. I mean, it's normal for players to go through this. I think he's going to finish right around 80 points, but he's not going to beat 84 points. So I'm going to say false. Let's go to Saros here. True or false, UC Saros will salvage his season and kind of finish like back closer to his career numbers.
I'm going to say true. I'm still going to hold pretty confident on Saros. As I said, beginning of the episode, he's a notorious slow starter. Always, you know, because literally last year is a perfect example. November, we're here talking about what's going on. Do we need to start splitting these starts with Lincoln and a little more in Lincoln's favor? Then 2 months later in January, we're talking about, oh my God, is he going to win the Vezina? He made beginning January, he had a 63 save game against Carolina, and that was seemingly the peak. So I'm going to be a little more, I'm going to say, yeah, and I'm going to say a little more, actually a lot more confidently. I do think Saros is going to get back to his usual form again. Like I say, I'm not going to worry about Saros right now. And it's going to be until, I would say, about mid-December, where if he's still playing this poorly, then I'll really start to kind of freak out a little bit more.
There you go. I'm going to say true as well. I think Saros has already proven throughout his early part of his career that he is a world-class elite goaltender. And he's just going through one of those ruts that happens to every goaltender.
Absolutely.
And that gives me even more hope that the Predators are going to be in good hands later on in the season. They're going to get better and better.
Yes.
Once they get Saros back to his elite form, they're not going to have to necessarily score 4 or 5 goals a game, 3 or 4 goals a game. They're going to win some of these. They're going to start winning some of these games thanks to Saros holding the opposition to 2 goals or less.
Yep.
They're going to start getting some of those wins. And then suddenly you're going to see the Predators get some of these winning streaks. They're going to win 3 or 4 in a row because Saros is going to be clicking. The power plays should start getting better and better and better. It's just all these things hopefully can come together at once around the All-Star break maybe, and the Predators can tread water just long enough to remain in that playoff hunt, and then we'll see what happens from there, which I feel like we go through that every year with this franchise. Yep. But it feels different this year.
It's way different this year. Again, you got a new coach, new GM.
It's not the same lineup, basically.
You got all these. Yeah. We're getting the youth movement pretty much everyone wanted. Besides a few players here and there, you got obviously Yossi, but Ryan O'Reilly. Ryan O'Reilly has been a great addition to the squad so far, and he's great for a team like the Preds is being a mentor for these guys. And a lot of people can't say enough about Ryan O'Reilly.
For sure. So that gives me hope. So I'm going true as well. Let's go to our last one here. All right. Upcoming homestand, Max.
Yep.
Our upcoming home games here, because they're on a stretch of 9 of 10 games.
And they're in St. Louis this Friday. They're in St. Louis.
Yes. So they're in a stretch of 9 of 10 games at home. They lost to Arizona. They lost to Anaheim. Oh, yep. Another game where they blew 2-0 leads.
Yeah.
So just think if they could have not blown those 2 leads, they've been on a 4-game winning streak.
It's twice against Arizona.
Yes. Twice. So, and then they've won their last 2 against Chicago and Colorado. So they're 2-2-0 on this long home stand right now, home stretch. Yep. So yes, they got Calgary coming up. Then they Then they go to St. Louis. Then they get three games at home: Winnipeg, Pittsburgh, Minnesota.
Yep.
All right. I'm going to ask you, true or false, over the next five games, including the road game at St. Louis, the Predators go 3-2-0.
Trying to think here. I certainly think we're going to win two of them. A third, I think we're going to beat Calgary tomorrow. And then, you know, I'm going to say true. I think they're going to get the third win. I think they're going to do it.
All right. So yeah. a lot of positivity and optimism coming from Max Greenberg. Yeah, right,
there's
in this true or false segment. So you see it down there below, true or false. We just ran through it. Let me answer mine real quick. All right, true or false. The next five games for the Preds: at home against Calgary, on the road at St. Louis, at home against Winnipeg, at home against Pittsburgh, at home against Minnesota. I'm going to do it even better for you, Max. Do it even better for you. All right. I'm going to say true. They're going to win four of their next five.
All right.
They're going to win four of their next five. I got them losing at home to Winnipeg. I think Winnipeg's kind of their kryptonite for some reason. I don't ever feel good when they play Winnipeg. Kyle Connor might be the new Leon Draisaitl for me. I mean, that dude just scares the crap out of me every time I got to see Kyle Connor skating at UC Soros. I just see the puck going in the back of the net. So I'll say if I'm calling them 4-1-0 in the next five, I'm going, they're definitely beating Calgary. I'm calling my shot. It might be tough, but I got them beating St. Louis. I don't trust St. Louis. They're playing okay right now, but I don't trust St. Louis. They're going to lose to Winnipeg. Pittsburgh doesn't wow me at all. They're not the same Pittsburgh they used to be. And Minnesota is really playing.
That's what I was going to say. I guess when you look at those teams, the best team is Winnipeg, who's third in the Central, and I wouldn't think they'd be. And I honestly think that's a team that's outperforming expectations. So, yeah, I mean, I guess the caliber of team the Preds are playing in these next few games is not all that great.
There's nothing that stellar. There's nothing that scares you. Now, obviously, anyone can beat anyone on any given night. It's the NHL. But I'm just going on paper, a lot of favorable matchups coming up here. A lot of favorable matchups. So I'm going 4-1-0, so I'm saying true. That's our true or false segment. Well, Philip Forsberg beat his career high of 84 points. Max says true. I say false. Will UC Soros return back to his career form?
That one's the one where I'm like, I think it's going to happen.
Max is very, very confident and true. I'm not as confident as Max, but I did say true as well. And then we both think that the Predators will go at least 3-2-0 in the next five. I actually got the Predators going 4-1-0. Right. So a lot of positivity going on here in episode 209. That'll do it for you when you beat a team like the Avalanche thrilling fashion, like we just saw on Monday night. All right, we got to get to one more sponsor real quick, and then we're going to wrap up episode 209 with my guest co-host, Max Greenberg. All right, so we've told you about Raycon and all of their amazing tech supplies, their earbuds, their speakers, their water filtration systems. They have so many outstanding products, and it is that time of year where you got to start thinking about your Christmas list. You got to start thinking about what you're getting all of those relatives, those long-distance relatives. You don't know what to get them for Christmas. Well, we've got something for you here. So, yeah, the holiday season is so chaotic, and so why not go for a really outstanding product like Raycon? It may be too early to start decorating for the holidays, but it's never too early to start your holiday shopping. Why not take care of it now before the crowds and packed calendars make shopping a total nightmare, especially when you can get some of the best deals of the season well before Black Friday. Black Friday is coming up right now, though, so you better hurry. You can shop Raycon products right now and save up to 50% off because their early Black Friday sale is going on now. You've heard me talk about Raycon's products before. Some of their best integrations are, of course, their wireless speakers that you can take anywhere you go. And, of course, their water filtration system is one of the top products out there. So Raycon first made a name for themselves in the audio space with products like their everyday earbuds, known for delivering high quality and thoughtful features like a 32-hour battery life and a perfect in-ear fit for all-day wear and lasting comfort. And this past year, they expanded their entire business with the introduction of Raycon Home and Raycon PowerTech. So both of these products are amazing. They're five-star reviewed. Magic 180 cable allows you to charge iOS, micro USB, and Type-C devices 8 times faster with 100-watt power delivery. We're always trying to charge stuff in this world, Max. We're always trying to charge our phones, our headphones, our this and that. Like, everything always has to get charged. So this is an amazing product with Raycon right there. And their faucet filter, ultra filler filters the water in your tap against chlorine and heavy metals. None of that stuff I want to drink and have in my water. It's a must-have for ensuring the water you use to wash your face and brush your teeth is, you know, actually clean. Raycon is known for delivering high quality and thoughtful features at half the price of other premium tech brands. It's no wonder their products have racked up tens of thousands of five-star reviews. To get everyone in the holiday shopping spirit a bit early, Raycon is currently offering 20% off everything on their site, everything, with select products up to 50% off. So go get your holiday shopping done right now on Raycon. So beat the crowds and save now. Trust me, you do not want to miss out on Raycon's early Black Friday sale. Hurry up now to buy raycon.com/THPN to get 20 to 50% off site-wide. That's buyraycon.com/THPN to score up to 50% off Raycon products. Buyraycon.com/THPN. All right, we are going to wrap up episode 209 with my outstanding guest co-host, Max Greenberg, with our hottest take. Max to come up with a take, a good spicy take for the Preds to wrap up 209. But I'll give mine first.
Okay.
And then we'll go to Max's. All right. Here is my take. And I've already touched on this. I think it was the last episode, but I lightly touched on it. I didn't really go into it deeply. The Predators are going to trade one of their big three goalies at the 2024 trade deadline.
I can see it.
It's probably not going to be Saros. They seem pretty heavily invested in Saros.
And I don't blame them for that, to be totally honest.
But if you don't trade Saros, I think at that point, I think you trade Lincoln. And obviously, it's going to depend on where you're at in the standings. But it's going to depend on how Yaroslav Askarov's playing in Milwaukee, if you can trust. But I want to get Askarov up to the NHL as soon as possible. I really do. He's clearly shown he's ready. He's already made his NHL debut. You got to start figuring out if he is going to be ready to take the mantle from Saros if Saros isn't re-signed, because next year is the last year of his current contract, and then he's going to get a massive pay increase. So there's a lot of touch and go going on right now. There's a lot of moving parts. It's probably not going to be Kevin Lankinen that's going to be here long term. But what if you actually did trade UC Saros, got a king's ransom for Saros at the deadline 2024, and then you roll with Lankinen, who has played well enough to be a starter. Yeah,
absolutely.
You roll with Lankinen. And then your goalie, you move forward with Lankinen, who's going to be cheaper than Saros moving forward.
Yes.
And you bring Askarov up as the backup to Lankinen for a short term. And then eventually Askarov becomes your franchise goalie and you move on from Saros. That would be a very, very bold decision by the front office to make. I don't think they're going to do it.
I don't think they would either.
But my Preds hot take is that one of those three will be traded. It could be Askarov. We've already heard the rumors about the Edmonton Oilers being in the market for a goalie desperately right now. The easiest bet is that they trade Lankinen at the deadline, because he would get a decent return as well.
Yeah.
For a team that's desperate for a goalie.
But
what do you think about that, Matt?
Yeah, as far as, this isn't – and this, what I'm about to say, is not the hot take I was going to bring up. But I seem to be one of the only ones in this fan base on Twitter, wherever it is, who's not against the idea of trading Askarov. Like, and I get, you know, he's one of the better goalie prospects we've seen. You don't want to trade a guy like that. But if you know you have Soros and you have that stability and goal, that alone is hard to find. And so it's not like Soros is old at all. Like, what's he like now, 27, 28 or something like that? I forgot exactly, but he's around that ballpark of age. And it's not like he's just going to fall off the face of the earth anytime soon. Like, he'll still have plenty of years left to play, and I'm sure he'll still be a very good goaltender by the time the Predators are actual contenders again, or should be. So pretty much nobody in the fan base agrees with me, but I would be, you know, if you decide that Soros is a guy you want as your long-term guy, then I'm okay trading Askarov, because you're probably still going to get a lot of picks for him if people still think he's as good as he was hyped up to be.
Yeah. And you got to think about it this way too. Just thinking long-term, we got a lot of comments I want to get to as well before we close out episode 209, but you got to think about it this way too. If everything goes according to plan, you go into next season, you're definitely calling Askarov up. If you still have Soros at that point, well then Askarov backs up Soros. But then you could trade Soros next year. But how many teams are going to want Soros knowing that he's about to go into a contract year?
Right. And then knowing the Preds have to do something.
Soros' biggest value is never going to be higher than at this 2024 deadline. No, his value is probably going to drop at the 2025 deadline, because there's going to be your market's going to drop. You're not going to have as many teams who are going to be able to afford to take on a UC Soros at that point, because you're getting him as a rental at that point. Literally a one-year rent. You might be getting him as a rental for your playoff run, which could still get the Predators a very large haul as well. So there is that option that you could pass the 2024 deadline. You keep Soros, obviously. You take Askarov into the 2024-2025 season. That's your goalie combination, your duo, your 1-2 punch for next season. Lankinen's out of the picture at that point. And then you have to make a decision on what to do with either one of those goalies.
And that's where I'm saying is, like, then teams will know the Preds have to do something then and there, no matter
and
what.
You could wait to trade Askarov until that year, until that deadline. So it really comes down to how long do they want to wait to do this. I think you got to trade Lankinen at the 2020. He's playing too well. I think there's too many teams who would love to have him. And you know he's not coming back. After this year, he's not coming back.
No.
So you might as well trade him. So most likely it's Lankinen that gets traded, but that is my take, my Preds take. Yeah. One of those three is getting traded. The Preds are trading a goalie at the 2024 deadline.
Yep. All right. My hot take is, and I thought this in the episode, and if I would have said this a year ago, heck, even 9 months ago, I probably would have been grilled for it. But Dante Fabbro is going to get a multi-year contract extension at the end of this year.
Wait, say that again.
Dante Fabbro is going to get a multi-year contract extension after this year.
I like that. I didn't even think about that at all, where you were going with that, but that's a good take.
And
I love that you bring that up, because, and I want you to expand on this. I think me and you have talked about it before on like Predlines and stuff in our writing, but Dante Fabbro was going into this season under an immense amount of pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. And all the rumors had been for years that he's going to get traded. He hasn't lived up to expectations, this isn't that. But this year has been his best year, his most consistent year of hockey so far. A lot of people's biggest knock on him was that he would always make stupid mistakes. And all the mistakes he would make would get the puck would be in the back of the net. But this year, he's just been a steady defensive presence. He hasn't made hardly any, at least not that I've seen, you know, real mistakes. And, you know, he's just been super solid. And again, we've seen before, he's a decent player, because he was alongside Josi on the same pairing the year that Josi got his 96 points. And this year he's on top pairing again. He's earned a spot on the top pairing.
For sure.
And I think it's kind of coming together. Maybe you call him a late bloomer, call it what it is, but it seems like this year he's starting to put it together. You know, I wasn't I wasn't too high on him, and I don't think a lot of people were going. He, to be honest, Dante Fabro has been a very controversial figure in Nashville since he started playing. But I think, you know, this has been by far his most consistent year, and I think after this year, I think he's going to get an extension.
You're saying in the offseason or before the offseason?
It could be. He's still a restricted free agent after this year, right?
Restricted free agent at the end of the offseason.
Yeah, I would say, I think, let me see here. He's 25 right now. Yeah, he's still going to be restricted. Yeah, so whether that's, you know, I guess maybe probably wait till the offseason. I think you want to see him put at least a full year of consistency before you commit to him long term. But provided he keeps this up, I think he's going to get locked up for a few more years.
Well, here's some things I have on Dante Fabro to that regard that makes me just so impressed with what he's done. He's gone from being a player who was on the top of everyone's trade board at the last deadline, and he didn't end up getting traded. Like, the Predators traded a bunch of guys, but they did not trade Fabro, which was pretty surprising in the moment. And then he comes back or whatever, and then we're all thinking, okay, going into training camp, we're all thinking, is he even going to be in the starting lineup?
Right. He was not in the first game of the year. He was not in the lineup.
Exactly, because you had Luke Schenn. Luke Schenn threw everything off. No one knew what to think about the Preds' decor after they went out and got Luke Schenn. And so ever since Luke Schenn's been out, which has been every game except for the first game, Dante Fabro has just lived up to the pressure. And you watch his play, you cannot discount how solid of a defender he is in his own zone.
Absolutely.
I mean, and he hits hard. He doesn't get enough credit for being a hard hitter. He is a really hard checker. He's a great poke checker. He's great at altering shots, getting in shot lanes. He's a great skilled passer. He's really good at getting out of the zone. He does make some gaffes here and there that our old friend Kyle Perkins, old co-host of the show, used to always just get on Dante Fabro for having those. He hasn't had as many of them.
I'd love for Kyle to be listening to this right now, hearing what I'm saying, that he's going to get an extension.
But he's cleaned up a lot of those mistakes Fabro has.
Absolutely.
This year.
Absolutely.
I can't really think of any really bad, glaring mistakes that Fabro has made this year. Maybe
not
one.
Not to mention, too, he's got 2 goals and 3 assists. So it's not like he's putting a zero on the offensive side of things either.
Have you seen his shot, his one-timer?
Yeah. Yeah, he had a great one-timer in the game against Arizona.
He's starting to look like the second coming of Roman Josi out here, or Shea Weber. I'm being dead serious. His one-timer is on point.
Yeah, absolutely. No, Dante Fabro has been it's been fairly consistent from every point this year. And it's one of those things where it finally feels like it's really coming together. And I really think that last year when he got extended as opposed to trade, it felt like from then on it kind of turned for him. As far as, you know, I think from that point on, he really started to get better, and he hasn't looked back since.
Yeah. So we got Justin Gambino and Mike Twitter, our friends in the comments here, kind of talking about our true or false segment, asking about the really good one there about true or false Forsberg will beat his 84-point career high that he set in 2021-22. That was that wild season where Josi went for almost 100 points and Duchesne and Forsberg were trading goals left and right.
Both up 40. That never happened before in Preds history.
But Justin Gambino seems to be on your side, Max, that he thinks that Forsberg can beat his 84-point season, career high, and he really credits Ryan O'Reilly for that.
Well, absolutely. And just think, if they put Juuso Parsonen back on that line, you never know what could happen again.
And your guy Dante Fabro is only 6 points away from his season totals of last year.
Yeah. Yeah, truly, it honestly feels like finally a breakout year for Fabro.
I would love it. And like I said, I respect the guy so much, and I do think he's worked on his offensive game. The shot looks great.
All the noise, everything, he stayed with it.
I like him being on the top pairing, and I really got to give the coaching staff a ton of credit for identifying that pairing and making that decision and sticking with it.
Yes. Absolutely.
They haven't gone away with what works. I love that. How many times would John Hines just go away from something that works?
No, and you know, not, you know, again, like, and I will say again, you know, I hope I hope that Luke Shen coming back does not throw things off, because
I'm worried about that too. You and I both feel strong that
Fabro has earned that first pair. He absolutely has.
Oh my gosh. If Luke Shen comes back in the lineup and they put Luke Shen on the top pairing with Roman Yossi,
I will not be happy.
I will write.
Yeah. I'll have some words. I'll have some words about that one. I certainly will.
No, I think you put Luke Shen on the bottom pairing and see how it goes.
You and I are going to disagree. I don't even know that you put him back in the lineup, to be totally honest.
Well, then you trade him. I don't know.
Did they sign him as a defenseman? I honestly think that, you know, even for the penalty kill, like Carrier has played well enough defensively to be on the penalty kill. I wouldn't put him on the penalty kill, but Tyson Berry's looked pretty good in the zone end. I'm not so convinced that you got to put Luke Shen back in the lineup. I'm really not.
I think you're right. And then you've already seen Spencer Statsny get in the lineup and look pretty
good. Yeah. Oh my God. I forgot about him. Like, what are you going to do with all these decisions?
And you've seen Mark Delgado in there and look pretty good. So yeah, I don't know what the hell happens with Luke Shen.
Yeah, I don't either.
That's crazy, man. It's almost like the Predators just went out and bought a player for one game.
It literally seems like they paid for a seventh defenseman.
But unfortunately, didn't they get Luke Shen for like 3 years? They signed him for like 3 years.
That was the one contract in the offseason that I really did not like.
I am on full record. I have receipts. I have receipts on this podcast when it happened. I was so baffled by the signing of Luke Shen.
That was the one where I was like, what?
I obviously didn't predict that he would get hurt in the first game, and it sucks that happened. I didn't think it made sense, because I just thought the Predators had plenty of defensive options and they didn't need to add Luke Shen. I certainly wouldn't pay that much
for a seventh defenseman.
I already knew that Spencer Statsny had played. He had already been in and looked good. I didn't know about Mark Delgado now. Statsny's a great skater. We still haven't even seen Jordan Gross this year, who was in got didn't some they put lineup waivers? Time. They may have. I don't know, man.
I honestly would be lying if I said I remember what happened with him, or if I even remembered if he was on this team or not. If I'm, again, being very honest there.
Luke Shen. Let me find him here. He is he signed for 3 years, man.
Yeah,
They went out and signed a 34-year-old defenseman for 3 years, and he's played one game. 2.75 million.
I don't know, man.
And there's going to be no trade market for him.
None.
No one's going to take Luke Shen.
Absolutely not.
They're stuck with him. They're stuck with a 2.75 million player.
Although I will say, Tyson Berry does come off the books this year, and that will probably make things a little easier. Maybe they trade Berry at the deadline and free up a little room there. But yeah, no, Luke Shen right now seems like a nothing, and there's nothing they can do about it.
Justin Gambino says trade him for future considerations.
I don't even know if I would do that, honestly. I literally think he might really be untradeable.
And a bucket of pucks. Hey, pucks. I mean, everything costs more these days, so maybe a bucket of pucks would be worth it.
Yeah. But yeah, no, that I was the one, st- they that are, the one. They contract. Are. That was like the one move in the offseason where I'm like, I don't know, Barry. I don't know.
They're stuck with Luke Shen, and I'm not happy about how he got hurt, but or anything like that. I would love to have seen him play. He's got the Stanley Cup pedigree. I get all of that, but you can't justify him taking a roster spot, right, a starting position right now from anyone who's played on the defense. The only argument you can make for putting Luke Shen in the lineup right now, I will say this, is I do think UC Saros needs all the help he can get with bona fide defenders and veterans, and I do Luke Shen's gonna lay the body out there. He's going to get a lot of hits. He's going to make things difficult for the opponent. He's going to be much better on the penalty kill, possibly. But is that enough to steal a starting spot away from a Alexander Carrier or a Jeremy Lauzon? I mean, or Spencer Statsny? I mean, that's the issue you're facing right now.
And I think a clear argument, you know, maybe even against Luke Shen is, you know, so much of Brunette's system is speed and playing that 200-foot game effectively. You know, it's part of the reason, you know, the Preds have been good as they've been at 5-on-5 defense, because they've been able to skate down the ice and eliminate chances. But Luke Shen's a bigger guy. He's not nearly as fast. Is he going to be able to keep pace in a system like Brunette's? I don't know.
They should have known that when they signed him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. That you really sparked something that I can't get out of my mind right now is what is the defensive lineup going to look like when Luke Shen is ready to play? Because we know Ryan McDonough is going to be back in there.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
So that completletely takes out Spencer Statsny probably, yeah, right?
I mean, unless you put him in for Jeremy Lozon, which I would not hate, although I could not see happening.
Well, if you look at the defensemen, Ryan McDonough is a left defenseman, left shot defenseman.
Yep.
So Spencer Statsny is a left shot defenseman. So you swap those out. But then if you have to throw Luke Shen back in there as well, I mean, that's where it gets just.
Yeah. Who do you? I wouldn't take out.
I feel really bad. That's why about you
force trading Barry at the deadline to, or you can't resign. You can't justify resigning Barry. There's no way.
It would probably be if Luke Shen comes back into the lineup, it's going to be Jeremy Lozon who comes out. I'm not saying I like that. I still don't know
because like you got Fabro who's on the right side, Carey is on the right side, and Barry's on the right side. Unless is Shen one of those guys who can play on the left or right side? I honestly don't know.
You can't lose Carrier. You cannot take Carrier out. I don't think so either. He's got offensive upside. I think swapping out Shen and Lozon is an even trade-off because they both had similar styles.
But again, then you got Barry and Shen both right-handed defensemen. How's that work?
Well, Lozon is, yeah. I mean, they're gonna have to figure some things out. I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll have to wait and see. Yeah. You're right. It's what they call a cluster, and I won't say
it
the
is
last
a cluster.
Part of that word.
And
I won't say
that's
the last
be a
part
hard
of that
decision
word.
For Andrew Brunette to make. Like I said at the beginning of the episode, he has some hard decisions to make on who's going to be in this lineup night in and night out.
You might be right, man. It might be Carrier that's lost if Shen goes
or
in.
I guess the biggest thing I say, it all but forces them to trade Barry at the deadline, or at the very least not re-sign him after this year.
The only way I see them trading Barry is if they're way out of the playoff hunt and the season's pretty much like definitely done for.
Yeah, man. I really wish I had a definite answer at this point in time, but.
Well, we left our Catfish and Ice listeners plenty to chew on going into Thanksgiving, no pun intended. So we hope everyone has an awesome Thanksgiving. If you're listening on this beautiful Wednesday, the next day, then you've got one more day before Turkey Day. We thank you for listening to the podcast on all of the podcast platforms. Give us a shout on YouTube. Watch our live episodes. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel, or you can follow us on X at Catfish Ice. This has been Chad Minton, your host, with our outstanding guest co-host tonight, Max Greenberg. Thanks, man, for joining the show, dude. You've been
Absolutely. Been great talking. I loved it. Been great.
We went on a lot of tangents, but tangents are fun sometimes.
They're really good.
Throw all the show notes out the window and you just go on tangents. That's what sports.
No, that's when it makes it best, when you can have the genuine conversations on air.
This has been water cooler talk tonight. This has been water cooler talk. Sitting at the water cooler. All right, Mike Twitter saying so long here. Happy Thanksgiving. See you on the next show. We will hopefully be back next week. We'll get Rich Howe back on the show next week when the schedules get a little bit more normal. Until then, everybody, enjoy your Thanksgiving. Thanks for listening. This has been episode 209 of Catfish and Ice, brought to you by DraftKings and Raycon, part of the Hockey Podcast Network. Stay safe, everybody.
See you guys later.